Jesus, cough.
The Seven Fires of the Prophecy. For most people, we don't know what that is, but indigenous people know it as a key spiritual teaching for North America and suggest that the different colors and traditions of human beings can come together on a basis of respect. That sounds amazing, but how do we get majority of human beings to understand this prophecy? Well, today we are joined by Chief Robert Matuashing, who is Anishinaabe, our brother from the north. We're going to find out his teachings and the history passed down from generations into understanding what the seven prophecies are and how maybe it can change our world and how maybe it can help our world. So let's go through the seven fires of the prophecy. I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. Please welcome to the Truth Be Told studios for the first time, Chief Robert Matuashing. Hello, hello.
Ah, bonjour.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time out. We're here on two different countries. I think you're in Canada, right?
Correct.
So, I'm excited to have you here because, you know, truth be told, we're all about, and I'm a Sagittarius, and truth be told, I'm a truth seeker, and I've always been wanting to find out more about, you know, not necessarily the spirit, but also the human knowledge of the past that hopefully we can use to correct our current situation we're in with the environment and politics and pretty much anything in the world. As you know, we're in the middle of a war, not necessarily us, but to me, when there's a war in the world, you know, the Mother Nature is paying a price too. So, first of all, okay, tell us your traditions and your tribe that you're from.
Well, first off, I'm going to reintroduce myself. First, my English name is Robert. My family name is Matuashing, is the proper pronunciation. And I don't expect anybody that doesn't have the Anishinaabe tongue to be able to twist that one.
Thank you.
But more importantly, I'm going to reintroduce myself in my traditional language, which is Anishinaabemowin, and I'll explain what I've shared.
Great.
So I just shared with you my traditional name is Strong Standing Red Buffalo. But more importantly, I shared with you that I'm of the Bear Clan. And there's a reason we do that. Prior to contact as indigenous peoples across the world, we didn't have the surnames that we all use today. So how did we keep track of who's related to whom? For us, right, it was a clan system. So I shared with you I'm of the Bear Clan. I've had opportunity to present in different corners of the world over my short life. And you'd be surprised. Somebody may approach me later from the audience, come shake my hand, say, "Welcome to my homeland, brother. I too am Bear Clan." We don't know where, how, or when our connections happened. All we know is through that clan system, we are directly blood related. Mm-hmm. So that's why we do that. I never know in the audience who my relatives are.
Right.
But now that you know who I am, I guess the onus falls upon you to introduce yourself to me as a relative. And that's why we do that. Mm. Now, as Anishinaabe people, as well with all indigenous peoples across the globe, we all firmly believe in spirit, that we are all spiritual beings having a physical experience. And at some point when our time here is complete, we return to that gateway we call death, back to spirit. And we're all here for a reason. And part of our life's journey is to search out what that reason is, which is why in our traditions, as Anishinaabe people, as an example, we have different rites of passage that help us find our purpose in life, which is something that's missing in society today. Today, the rites of passage that we have as an example would be somebody like somebody turning 16 here in Canada, which now means if you choose, you can go and apply for your driver's license, which kind of gives you a sense of freedom and responsibility. And then the next big one for here in Canada is when you turn 18. Now all of a sudden you're what they call legal to enter an establishment that sells spirits. Not the kind of spirits I reference, but other spirits cloud your judgment and moral fiber.
Right.
And yet that's what we celebrate today in today's world. So as a people in general, this is how we see things. Everything has spirit. Our great creator had created everything. Therefore, the essence of creator is within everything, which is also why we have that special reverence for everything upon our earth mother. And it is our earth mother that in essence is the very source of life itself, and not the resource in the way that we've been treating her and abusing her through exploitation. So it's those things all come into play when you start talking about different prophecies. And like other peoples of the world, we too had our own prophets. Which is also why as a people, we tend to be in ceremony all the time, because we're always trying to maintain that connection with spirit, because we firmly believe a lot of the direction that we need as human beings comes from spirit. And again, society today has done everything within its power to disconnect us from spirit. Because when you're following spirit, I always attune it to the little devil on one shoulder and a little angel on the other. Christian philosophy that you know in your heart what is right and what is wrong. But the mind is such a powerful instrument, tool of the human existence, that your mind can overpower your heart, i.e. your spirit, that little fire that's within each and every one of us. To where you know what you're about to do isn't right, but you go ahead and do it anyway because you convince yourself things are going to be all right. And that's part of where we find ourselves today with respect to what we're all experiencing today with respect to climate change.
Right.
and the destruction that has befallen our Earth Mother. Our mother is very much alive. Our mother is a living entity unto herself. And like anything alive, when you become sick, you start to convulse, you fever, you sweat, all these things. So all these natural disasters and the increase of these natural disasters is just a reflection of how ill our mother is, which basically falls upon our shoulders as the human being. You know, as human beings, we are the only species on the planet that has the ability to change our environment. As an example, if there was one species again to be taken off the face of the earth in order for everything else to flourish and do their thing,
right?
Hello,
that would be us.
They don't need us around, but we need all of them around. Without them, we can't exist. And with that, I just want to give you a very small blurb of one of our creation stories, where it was shared after everything had been created, instruction was given to everything that had been created by our great creator, that a new being was going to be lowered, a two-legged, but that this being would be so helpless, so pitiful, so much in need, that everything else that had been created at some point in their existence, they would have to give of themselves in order for this two-legged to survive. That shows the reciprocal relationship we're supposed to have with our earth and everything upon the earth. But again, because of our minds being what they are, we've convinced ourselves that we don't need to honor that relationship, that we can kind of do things as we wish without any repercussions. We're living in a world where a lot of us are playing ostrich with our heads buried in the sand. Even to this day, there's still naysayers out there with respect to climate change, right? Again, that's the influence of the mind and how powerful it can be. But again, our elders always tell us the greatest journey the human being will ever make in their life is from here to here. Learn to listen to your spirit. Learn to listen to your heart. If you do that, it will never steer you wrong. I guarantee you that. It's when we listen to this all the time that we get ourselves into trouble, which is another reason, you know. We were given two eyes, two ears, and one mouth for a reason. We're supposed to look and observe twice as hard, listen twice as hard before we open our mouths and act. But in the world we live today, we don't follow those senses. We spew out stuff without really thinking, which again comes back to bite us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's kind of where things are at. So I've rambled a little bit.
No,
so I
it's
don't
great.
If you have any questions?
Of course, and well, that kind of brings me to a question, and I have tons of questions that what you were bringing up, but. You know, we're talking to a majority of our audience is not of Indigenous or Native Americans or, you know, and when we hear this, you know, majority of us are thinking with our minds. You know, we've been, you know, taught religion. We've been taught, you know, to fear our God. We've been taught to, you know, America first, which is, you know, I, you know, it's great to, you know, love your country, but it's also don't worry about the rest of the world. Well, now you're separating yourself from other spirits. So I'm going to take it even closer to your home is how do you keep your younger generation in line with the traditions of your ancestors? Because you know, you said alcohol. Unfortunately, stereotypically, you know, you talk about Native Americans, first thing we think of, oh, you know, a lot of alcohol. Well, how do you, I mean, like you said, it is a poison, but it was introduced by the white people, you know. And so how do you keep a lot of what we've poisoned, you know, well, now we've created technology and all these other things to keep your younger generation preoccupied from your traditions? How do you keep it focused on your knowledge?
Well, there again, you have to consider the history of our shared countries, both the United States and Canada,
right,
as well as other countries like Australia,
right,
et cetera.
Yeah, yeah.
Where the whole movement of colonization took place.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And a lot of it was... how would I say this? We were prevented by law, you know, to express ourselves in who we were. We were not allowed to speak our languages. We were not allowed to participate in our ceremonies. We were in prison, what I call modern day war camps called reserves.
Mm-hmm.
With invisible barriers to them and a gatekeeper on each reserve known as an Indian agent that restricted our movement.
Mm.
All these things took place, right? And that had a bearing on our people to where today I make the statement that every Indigenous person alive today in North America is an intergenerational survivor of... all that, all the colonization that's taken place, residential school, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
right? Where our children were stolen from us and
right.
and put in institutions simply to indoctrinate them, to brainwash them and to assimilate them, to be something other than who they are. So to answer your question, our elders tell us if you want to move forward in today's world, considering all that has happened, all that is here today and where we hope to be tomorrow, we need to go back to the beginning.
Hmm.
And by making that statement, what does that mean? That means as a people, we had gifts, talents, abilities, experiences, relationships, etc., that allowed us to not only survive, but to thrive on our lands for thousands upon thousands of years.
Hmm.
So there was tools and teachings within our ceremonies that helped us connect to the to our Earth Mother itself and to each other, and to maintain those relationships again in a respectful, loving, honest way. As a people, we never had jails because we didn't have criminals. We didn't have child and family services because everybody was responsible for the upbringing of that child. The child was central to our communities. It's only now that, because of a lot of these restrictions that have been lifted, where we allow are now again being allowed to take on those responsibilities, because for the longest time those responsibilities were stripped of us,
right?
Which is why a lot of our people turn to the different addictions, whether it's drugs, alcohol, or other, because they were trying to deal with the pain of being deprived of existing as to who they were meant to exist as. So in order to answer your question again, at every opportunity today, we're trying to, again, go back to the beginning, in particular with respect to our children. Our children are being exposed to the ceremonies again, because for the longest time, we weren't allowed to express ourselves. In essence, we were basically being told, you can no longer acknowledge Creator and all of creation in however you've done it for the last number of eons. That's not allowed anymore. If you want to acknowledge Creator, well, you're going to have to go through our doorway. Which at the time, I'm not here to criticize any particular belief system, but at the time it was Christianity. Okay. Yet in my own experience, what I found in my lifetime is I don't care what religion, philosophy you come from, whether you call God, the Creator, God, Creator, Muhammad, Buddha, Allah, or what have you. As a species on this earth, human beings, we have a lot more commonalities than we do differences.
Right.
Yet what do we focus on? The differences, which only again creates division and misunderstandings amongst ourselves as a people. And that's where these different prophecies came into play. You know, we were told, like the seven prophecy as an example, where we would come into a fork on the road and we would have a choice to make. There was one road that led down a very dark path and with all kinds of challenges down that path. And then there was another road where it wasn't very clear where it was going either, but it looked a lot clearer where we would have an easier time. And that people would come to this path having seen and experienced everything that we have up until this point, need to make that choice. But on that clear road, so to speak, was the indigenous people, the red man, as an example, that because of our, how would I say this? We never gave up our connection to spirit. We never let that go. We've always maintained it. Yes, it had to go underground because of the restrictions and the laws that were there against our people. But all it did is went underground. Our people knew just how important that connection was. So that's where the seven fire has led us. And it has the potential to lead us to the eight fire, which I think is what this Zoom video presentation is about.
Yes.
That prophecy. Yes. And what that talks about is you're going to have people from all walks of life. Some people reference it to the warriors of the rainbow that are going to turn to the red man for guidance and direction, to reconnect with spirit, to reconnect with all that is in a respectful, humble way in order to move forward for the sake of the young ones coming behind us. And I believe we're at that juncture today where that eight fire, I know in some ceremonial circles, has already been lit. And again, representation of people from all walks of life have been present at those sacred fire lightings, where again, people have been given the choice to walk down that clear road or that darker road. The ones that are connected to spirit are choosing that clear road. The ones that still have not reconnected to spirit and are going strictly from the mind, driven by greed, are going down that destructive path, which is where we find ourselves today, and a reflection of everything that's happening on the earth with respect to climate change. We're all feeling it. We're all living it. I'm up here in Canada, I'm 2 hours north of Winnipeg, which is kind of southern Manitoba.
Right.
And I woke up to 3 inches of snow again this morning. And they're talking about another snowstorm coming by the weekend. And I don't know about you, but I live in Canada. I'm used to snow, but even at this point, I'm sick of it.
Right. 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 Well, I live in Southern California, and I've been here 20 years. And in those 20 years, you know, like I said, I don't know where to put the blame, but I definitely have seen the seasons changing. Like rain when we're not supposed to have rain, drought when we usually don't have drought. You know, I'm not for sure what has changed, but the seasons have moved. It seems like 2 or 3 months. Like it's almost like the earth has turned a quarter where something has definitely changed.
And there's those prophecies too, where the poles would shift, right?
Right.
And our relatives to the north, the Inuit, as an example, their elders are claiming that those poles have shifted already number of degrees, which is why we're again seeing the increases of natural disasters that are taking place. Yeah. The world that right now is kind of out of balance with respect to that pole shift, mm-hmm. but it will eventually settle, right?
Right.
But by settling doesn't mean things are going to go back to where they were.
Right.
Just that by settling is get used to it. This is a new norm.
Right.
Right. And that's what a lot of people, even with respect to what happened with COVID, that's part and parcel of the prophecies of going through some very turbulent times because, again, of man's arrogance to the earth itself and to spirit. We're being put in our place, but the challenge we have is most people in power aren't listening. They're not getting it. You know, we live in a world where 1% of the world's population owns 99% of the world's wealth. What's up with that?
Right.
When you die, are you going to take it with you?
Right. No, they're not.
What's the point? When is enough enough?
Well, I was going to say
part of the challenge.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Sorry.
I didn't mean to keep going because your words are amazing. So I don't want to interrupt.
Yeah, as I was saying, when is enough enough? Like, even in my own mind, I've tried to fathom, you know, how much is $1 million? Well, that's what, $100,000, right? How much is $1 billion? My understanding is a million millions, right?
Right.
And then how much is $1 trillion? A billion billions. And I'm hearing there in the very not too distant future, we're going to have the world's first trillionaire. What can somebody do with all that wealth? Because for the most part, these people that have control of all that wealth, are they actually putting it back and investing it in mankind? No, they're not. They're hoarding it. For what? Again, my question is, when they die, what are they going to do with it?
Right.
They can't take it with them, right? So that to me is a sense of insanity and disconnect with spirit and disconnect with one's inner being in relation to everything that is all around us. And that's what we need to get back to as human beings, indigenous or non-indigenous alike, because ultimately we are all human beings. And as each human being, we all have different talents, gifts, and abilities that nobody else has. That's just who we are as individuals. And our great creator loved us so much that he gave us the freedom of choice and the freedom of will. But he also tried to impress upon us the importance of spirit. But there again, as I stated, the world we live in today has tried to do everything within its power to devoid the current world of spirit. Why? Because spirit will always correct you if you allow it to. But it goes away from their own personal agendas. Again, I always state, which is driven by power, fueled by greed.
Mm. Can I ask? Can
that's
I ask
my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, can I ask you this? Because, as you know, a lot of Native American tribes now have casinos, a lot of casinos. And they are, I mean, even here in Los Angeles, there's several. And a lot of them have gotten very, well, at least some, not all, the tribes itself maybe not, but the leaders have become wealthy. What is your take on casinos when, like you said, we just talked about the wealth of, you know, these 1%. Are the these casino heads, are they giving back to their own people?
I'd like to believe they are in some respect. We have a different situation up here in Canada pertaining to the ability for First Nations to have casinos. Okay, it's a different system in the States.
Mm-hmm.
Over here, we're kind of in bed with the different governments, i.e. provincial governments,
right,
or territorial governments. In the States, it's a totally different story. And there again, unless you're spiritually grounded, and I don't care if it's indigenous casinos or casinos in Las Vegas.
Right, right.
Unless you're spiritually grounded, it doesn't matter. Your head's going to get control of you, and you're going to want more.
Yeah.
It's going to be driven by greed. That's why it's so important, again, as Indigenous people, we have to maintain that spiritual connection.
Yeah.
If you have that, like I said at the very outset, if you listen to your spirit, it will never steer you wrong.
Mm.
That's the trick.
Yeah, and
but I don't know if I've answered your
no,
question.
You did. You did. I just, because it just popped into my head, because, you know, there's a lot of now wealthy tribes, but not necessarily it's trickling down to the tribal members.
Yeah.
So I don't, you know, I don't know, because I'm not part of any tribe. But
there again, that could also be said for any other business or entity out there.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure.
Right.
Well, one thing that we talked about, and I'm going to ask you about being a knowledge keeper here in a second, but one thing we were talking about with, you know, Mother Nature and, getting back to spirit, you know, humans getting back to the spirit, with Mother Nature. Well, the indigenous people kind of grew up in this, with this knowledge, well, at least majority of Caucasians grew up in Christianity or a Catholic or something like that. So we don't have that mindset. We have the mindset of connecting to Jesus and Mary and God, the creator, but it's a whole different connection, I think, than indigenous people. How do we, I mean, because like we said, you know, a lot of the main people that we looked at, Billy Graham and all these people, they became very powerful people politically and millionaires and stuff like that. So how do people like myself, Caucasians, connect with that same spiritual connection that the indigenous people have if we never were taught that at all?
I would argue that, in the sense that,
please,
what I stated earlier, if you want to move forward, go back to the beginning. Non-Indigenous people, regardless of where they came from, were Indigenous to their areas at one time.
That's true. Yeah.
I'll use the Celts as an example.
Oh, great! I'm part of the Celts.
Celts had, they used a clan system.
Yeah.
They had their own spirituality, right?
Right.
But again, it was these people of, do I say, influence back in those days that wanted more. So with the Crusades and stuff like that, they conquered under the name of God other peoples,
mm-hmm,
and stripped them of their lands and resources and took control. And the tool they used at the time was Christianity. Christ, we believe in that the prophet Christ walked the earth. There's even a period in his lifetime where it's not exactly clear where he was.
Mm-hmm.
Our people have always maintained he was over here hanging out with us, that the life Jesus tried to live was that of an indigenous person.
Right.
Right. In our language, we call him Tikwanabin, the carpenter. And you also have to consider, and again, I'm not criticizing the Christian belief system, but back in those days, it was of the Christian belief that if you were not a Christian, you were not a human. Mm-hmm. So because of that, you know, the doctrine of discovery and the papal bulls and all that stuff gave them right in their own minds to take over any lands discovered, not occupied by other humans.
Mm.
That's what gave them, again, in their minds, the right to take over the Americas, as we know them today, Turtle Island, as we call them. And so getting back to your question, everyone was indigenous to their own particular area at one point, and they all had their own different belief systems.
Mm-hmm.
Christianity came much later. All right?
Right.
And then, how would I say this? People influenced Christianity with their own ways of thinking. Like even today, you have the Catholics, mm-hmm. right? I was actually baptized a Catholic because that was the predominant religion in our community at the time. I was an infant. I had no say in it. But as I grew up and I was exposed to our ways, I always jokingly tell people I'm a born again savage. All right.
That's anyway, a t-shirt right there.
But anyway, where was I going with this? The Christian belief and the words in the book they call the Bible, there's different versions of that Bible.
Oh, lots of different.
Why?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why? Again, people are putting their own thinking into it to influence things their way. You have the King James Version. Right. And as I was saying, the Catholic religion, it's known as the Roman Catholic religion.
Right.
Well, the Romans, they're gone. Today, we just simply call them Italians. Right.
Right.
But yeah, but that whole thing. And yet that's still being pushed today because the things that were recorded in certain writings, maintain the status quo of power and control.
Mm.
Right, that's my take on it.
No, it's a great take.
Yeah,
that's a great take, and this leads me to my question because we have priests and ministers and all this stuff in the Christian church, but there we have people like yourself with knowledge keeper, and I'm curious of that title and how you got that title and when do you finally say I get that title from my elders or my peers?
Okay. I prefer the term knowledge keeper as opposed to elder. Some people have labeled me as elder. I'm a little older, but I'm by no means an elder. So that's why I don't really like that term. And further to that, the term elder is, it's not our term. That's an English term, right?
Mm-hmm.
Knowledge keeper is a little more closely related to how we would say it in our language, which would be kentamago. Is somebody that knows stuff, all right? I've been fortunate in my lifetime, right, from when I was a young child to be exposed to our ways. And because of that, I had some challenges growing up and attending public school and stuff like that. Part of it was I really didn't like school. And I, as an adult, I finally realized why I didn't like school as much as some other kids did was in particular history and social studies, because I knew the stuff they're trying to shove down my throat totally conflicted with what I was being taught at home.
Right.
Right. So the title knowledge keeper is, again, something I prefer to be called versus elder. But again, it's not me that, how would I say this? I don't market myself out there as a knowledge keeper, i.e. elder. It's the people that have put that tag on me. And that's their prerogative.
Right.
Okay, I guess because of what I've been fortunate enough to learn in my lifetime, and how I try and share what I've learned. Because what I'm sharing with you, that's not me. Okay, that's my people. That's our experience. That's our history. That's where that comes from. The things I share with you comes from there. Okay. I'm just a voice with some kind of a title.
Right. Right. And it makes sense. And, but you also, you know, we say chief, but is it, I know back in the day, was it more family, like a monarchy where a chief died, his son became chief? Or how do you get to become
again,
chief?
Okay, again, chief is not our term.
Okay, that's our term.
That's a European term, okay? And traditionally, historically, we did not have one chief that was the end-all, say-all, and do-all for everything that happened in the community. We had a number of leaders, okay, again, that had certain talents, gifts, experiences, and abilities. And we would turn to them when the need arose that we had to tap into that knowledge, which is all we've always had councils.
Right, right.
Because we try to do things in consensus because it involved the community as a whole, right? So you would have different leaders. You had some leaders that were good at governance. You had some leaders that were good at hunting, et cetera, et cetera. And you turn to them. And the other part of it is, traditionally, for most of our societies, we were matriarchal in structure, not paternalistic.
Right.
It was our women folk that had a huge say in the selection of leadership.
Really? That's great.
Because they would watch that individual right from infancy growing up, and they would start to notice certain traits, gifts, and abilities of that young person, which kind of helped steer them into the direction that they would carry out as adults at one point. But when they introduced, when colonization happened and stuff like that, and up here in Canada, they introduced something called the Indian Act.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is they introduced a governance system which was foreign to our people. First off, if you wanted to run for council, you had to be a male, a member to that band of Indians, and 21 years of age. And by doing that, what they did was they disenfranchised the most influential aspect of our societies, which was our women. Overnight, our women lost their voice. And that wasn't reinstated until about 1960. 1960 was reinstated.
Wow.
I think it was 1951. My bad there. 1951, I think that was reinstated. But from about 1886 or 87, I think, is when that they introduced the Indian Act Chief and Council system, right? And even there, they call this bands of Indians.
Bands.
To this day, I'm trying to figure out what the hell a band of Indians is.
I've heard that term recently. Yeah. Like, yeah, I still hear that term, bands of Indians. Yeah.
Yeah, that's and I also appreciate that in the United States, it was slightly, although similar, a different process, right? In the United States, there was an actual war against the Indian. That's well documented in their history.
Right.
Of the 500 treaties negotiated in the United States, to date, not one of them been honored. They've all been broken. Okay.
Yeah.
Here in Canada, they use legislation. All right. And they tried to break a lot of those treaties, and they're still breaking a lot of the, how would I say this, the nuts and bolts of those treaties, or the meat of the treaties. But nowadays, what they're finding is they're finding themselves at Supreme Court case levels more and more, and each and every time they're losing, they being the governments, right?
Good.
Because it all goes back to how the system was created up here in Canada with respect to the Royal Proclamation of 1763. where the king stated, right, these are people unto themselves. They have their own governments, their own territories. If you're going to do anything over in the new world on my behalf, well, you need to initiate treaty with them. And it was them that initiate treaty with us. We didn't go to them and say we want a treaty. They came to us. Wow. Right. And treaties are something to last as long as the sun shines, the grass grows. And we used to say the rivers flow, but our women corrected us. They said, you guys had it wrong all the time. It was never the rivers flow. It was the waters flow. Not only the waters upon the earth and within the earth, but the waters that each and every one of us go through in that natural process called childbirth, where those waters break before right. we enter the physical realm. So in essence, the treaties are last as long as the sun shines, the grass grows, all the waters on the earth flow. But more importantly, people on both sides of these sacred agreements continue to be born is how long those are to last, in essence, in perpetuity. And again, how did our people know to do that?
Right, exactly.
Tie the newcomers into an agreement that would last in perpetuity. Again, our connection and guidance by spirit. Because we also see those agreements as tripartite agreements. There was us, there was the newcomers, and there was a third party involved. Creator and all of creation as witness, which is why to this day we still reference them as sacred agreements that can't be broken unless mutually agreed upon.
I'm gonna jump back to something you said earlier, and I don't want to put you on the spot when to list all the seven fires, but and then go eight. But you said something about the creator. The creator told the insects and the winged ones and all this before the man got here that we would be kind of a fragile, you know, a fragile being and needed help from, you know, or I think you said give of themselves, meaning, you know, we'd have to feed off them and plants and everything.
Yeah.
If the creator knew we were going to be so feeble, wonder if the creator also knew we'd become greedy and destructive to our own planet. It's, you know, I'm just curious because that's why put us on this planet to give us so much power to be destructive. What's your thoughts on that?
My thoughts on that, again, creator being all-knowing, etc. type of thing. Probably knew that potential was there.
Right.
Okay. But again, the creator probably had faith in his creation that if his creation, and even there, I hate using the term his,
right,
I've been conditioned that to you.
Right.
But that creator thinking, creator's creation would, if it could keep that spiritual connection, wouldn't fall into that area. Mm-hmm. Am I making sense?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and again, it to me, it always goes back to spirit and the connection of spirit and maintaining that connection. Like I said at the very beginning, and I'll sound like a broken record, listen to this, it will never steer you wrong.
Right. Well, I mean, our time is almost up, and I'm going to have you back because there's a lot of other questions that I have. But how does the people listening today and in the future, because people are always seeking spirit and, you know, truth, and if they come across this video, how do people, you know, if they're in Brazil or Australia, wherever they're at, they can find that spirit within themselves? How do they do that without having the knowledge of the indigenous and the ceremonies? How can they start focusing on finding that those answers again?
You need to get out on our land. That's where it begins. Get out onto the land, feel and experience all the land has to show.
Oh my
and
gosh,
teach.
Yes.
It's as simple as that. And the more we're out on the land, the stronger that connection becomes. Like, look at the vast majority of society today are living in cities.
Yeah.
Cities are devoid of that natural element. They're concrete blocks. So that connection to the earth itself has been severed again. Right? Yeah, they try and create little green spaces here and there, but it's not enough for the masses to feel that connection and to experience all that that's there. Right? When you're feeling down and stuff, I'm not calling you to become a tree hugger, but go to a tree. Stand with your back against that tree. Meditate. You'll find a difference. You'll feel a difference. You'll experience a difference. Because that tree in itself is a living entity. And it's rooted within the earth. And its arms outstretched to Creator and all of creation. That flow of energy, right? When your back's against it, you can get some of that energy, which helps center us.
Yeah. I have to say that's probably when people, I'm not a meditator. It's hard for me to meditate because my mind races. But I have to say where I'm the most at peace is when I go into the forest or I'm just go for a hike and nobody else is around. That's where I do. A lot of answers get or questions that I have, answers come. I feel more at home and at peace there.
Yeah. And why do you think that is?
For me, you know, a lot of my friends need people around to get that energy. But for me, this, like you said, the spirit, I just feel closer to God. I feel closer, as you would say, to the Creator. I've always been that way.
And the other connection, as opposed to the land, but in relation, is the water itself. Mm. Go to a body of water for the same experience. Because as human beings, the vast majority of composition is water.
Right. Right.
Right. The water has spirit. And without water, there is no life. Even when people are come weekend, you see vast migrations of people leaving the cities. Where are they heading? They're usually either heading out on the land or someplace by the water.
Right, right.
Without really understanding why, but that's why, because their spirits are longing for that connection.
I'm not so much water. I live here in close to the ocean. And I'm like, but for me, it's the rivers and streams that I love the most. When I'm out, I could sit there and watch the river for, you know, 20, 30 minutes, just hearing the trickles and the water, the sounds of water. But the ocean, for some reason, I don't feel as connected to the ocean as I do to like streams and rivers. So, yeah. It's interesting, but yeah, no, I hope people out there that are listening to us, you know, take your advice and just, you know, go out and maybe take your shoes off and feel the grass and grab a tree or lay on a rock, you know, or something. Yeah. I know it sounds silly for some people, but it's like, it does work. Yeah. So, well, how do people find you and find more about you? I mean, I know after this episode, they're definitely going to look for you.
I don't know what to tell you on that aspect. I'm affiliated with Turtle Lodge, which is the International Center of Indigenous Knowledge and Wellness. Mm-hmm. That's one venue. I'm really not about to give my personal email.
No, don't do that. Don't give your phone number out or anything.
No. I know better. But yeah, I don't have my own blog or anything like that.
You should. Yeah. You should.
Yeah, well.
To share that knowledge.
It's too much work.
It is.
I'm busy as it is. I'm doing stuff like this all the time.
Well,
plus, I have my regular day job.
You have your regular what?
Day job.
Oh, day job. Don't we all? Well, Robert, thank you so much for being part of Truth Be Told and sharing your knowledge. And I hope you continue to share it with anybody that will listen. And definitely we'll have to have you back. And we'll, I'm sure I have more to talk about. And plus, oh, for the people, you also co-wrote a book, you said, with a bunch of other people. I'm not even going to try to pronounce it. So if you want to pronounce the name.
Wabanung. Wabanung is the new dawn, the new sun as it rises type of thing. So it's, how would I say this? It's a guide to move forward for tomorrow.
Oh, nice. Nice. Well,
in relation to where we'll find ourselves today.
I'll definitely have to pick that book up.
Perspective and experience.
Definitely. Well, I'll pick that up, and hopefully some other people will grab that too. So, well, until next time, we thank you. And for the people out there that's joining us on this Friday, so please, you can watch Robert Hensley every Monday at 3 o'clock, Minuteman Report, Bonnie Burkett at 3 o'clock with Truth Be Told Transformation. You know, that's the more spiritual guru and stuff like that. But I had to have Chief Robert on to share his knowledge. But until next time, I'm Tony Sweet, and thank you guys. Please subscribe and share the show, and leave comments. We'd love to hear from you. Take care, and we'll talk to you soon. This has been another episode of Truth Be Told. Thank you so much for watching. Recorded live at UBN Go Studios in Burbank, California.
Yep.
Join us on social media. Facebook, Truth Be Told Radio. Instagram, Truth Be Told Paranormal. Go to Truth Be Told Worldwide for more information on upcoming shows.